Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. My name is Summer Brooks, and today's guest is the director and co-writer of The Curse of Sleeping Beauty, a new fantasy thriller coming out in May 17th. Perry Teo, thank you for joining us today.
Hello, how are you?
just good. Now, this is a reimagining of the original Brothers Grimm tale with quite a few twists to it. Where did you come up with this vision, this new vision for the story?
I guess the non-glamorous way of saying it is that it really came out of the joke.
Oh, no.
we were just sitting down and joking about fairy tales in general, all those happy endings and all that. So, taking Sleeping Beauty, the prince comes and he kisses her, she wakes up, blah, blah, blah. And I just sat there, I was like, so what if the prince fell? What's going to happen? Is she going to keep for another 1,000 years or something? And he's just poking fun at a fairy tale that made me think, wait a minute, maybe there's something to do with that. So that's why my story takes 1,000 years later when her prince met the king. And, throughout the years, I imagined that her sleeping body also became a vessel for a demon, dark energy, djinn, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Wow. A random thought, hey, but what if this turns into a movie?
A lot of ideas start with what if. I mean, in every sci-fi genre, that is really the same thing. What if this universe was that? What if time travel could do this? What if, there's so many, everything starts with a what if. So whenever a thought of what if thought comes to my head, I pay attention to it. Even though it came out as a joke, I'll just write it down somewhere. And, even on my phone, I have probably right now 200 pages of what ifs. And sometimes I'll go back, even I could be at a club, drinking, and that's always a bad idea because, if I get a what if while I'm having fun with my friends, the next day I get up, I look at it and go, wow, this is absolutely trash. But you just never know. You could be writing a script and that what if could come back again. So sometimes, your protagonist is stuck and all that, and you have a whole collection of books of what-if ideas that you can really pull from. So it's like a little resource book that I've been building for the last 15 years.
So what was it about this particular what-if that made you say, I'm directing this?
I think it's definitely the ability to really, really explore dream worlds. And by dream worlds, I definitely wanted to go more towards the fantasy realm. In fact, the whole movie is divided into really three different realms. One is the, underground, the normal world, actually. One is the dream world. And the other one is that underground world where it's a mixed fusion of alternate reality and steampunk influence. Mm-hmm. So it's really just... I'm just really proud to be able to take the mess that's in my head and somehow be able to piece it together to form a coherent story around it.
Now, did you have a particular vision or style in mind? Because each of those worlds is represented a little differently.
Yeah. I guess when we designed each world, I tried to make sure my team were in different mindsets when we did that. But generally, the whole film, if you were to look at our lookbook, pictures and references that we can pull from, a lot of it came out from, The Cell, Silent Hill, Pan's Labyrinth, amongst many others. And so, those were some of my favorite films with some of the most stunning visuals. And I wanted to do something similar to that. It's really a homage to, my heroes that made my eyes go wide and my jaws drop, and so this film, every film I make really is a tribute to all my heroes when I was growing up, and I always believe that they are a part of my growing process as an artist, my indirect growing process as an artist, and their style, and their brilliance should be honored somehow. And I feel very, very fortunate to be able to be in a position to do that.
That's great. Some of the even the costuming in the dream world were just captivating. How long did it take to actually come up with those?
Well, I actually had, it's very unique just because I knew the Libby costume was going to be such a centerpiece of the movie that I actually hired one designer just specific for that. And she was actually an old friend of mine that I knew since my first film. And she has since done, she was actually an actress in my first film, but she has since gone on to make like this gorgeous, gorgeous costume. And so when I was doing Sleeping Beauty, it was like no brainer. I got called and I said, hey, I want you to design this almost like how, you know, a person would design a superhero costume. And you get to spend 2 months on it and you just work on this one costume. And we're going to do everything we can to this costume, from feathers to laser cutting to, you know, pinning the jewels, single-handedly in. We're going to create themes. We're going to choose materials that are actually pulling directly from this. Like if you see it, her headdress, it's got garden vines on it, mixed with jewels and leather, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of things. And you know, the train on it, on her dress is like immaculately long. And so then I had another costume designer who was more on working on the real life, you know, the normal world costumes. So it's interesting that in this film I actually opted to have, you know, two costume designers that don't actually work together. it's almost like you're my dream costume designer and you're my real world costume designer. And I work with them like separately so that their thoughts do not influence each other, and like, you almost see like a completely different look when it jumps from one to another.
So how long did the entire production take?
Production as in shooting, I'm assuming?
From the start of shooting to when you finished all the fun stuff.
We shot it in 21 days. So we only had 21 days to shoot this whole movie. Not long at all.
Wow. So the designing of the actual costumes and sets took longer than the actual shooting, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the design of it, everything took about, I want to say, probably 3 weeks. I was a little bit, you know, I wanted to start early, so I probably spent about 4 weeks just by myself, you know, in my office, pulling together a lookbook, doing design, things like that. You know, just 4 weeks just by myself. And then once I got my crew, they were able to take what I did with my research and expand it from there. So that became 3 weeks, and then, you know, trying to cram everything down into a 21-day shooting schedule.
For you, what was the most exciting thing you looked forward to shooting or designing?
You know, obviously, I want to say the dream sequences are really fun to do. Mm-hmm. there's no doubt about it. But one of the most challenging and fun parts about the shoot were the mannequins. I've always been terrified of mannequins. So, who isn't, right?
For me, it's clowns.
Well, we have a mannequin clown in there, too. that's funny. But, so, you know, being terrified of, you know, mannequins, you know, I obviously decided, hey, you know what, I want to have a house full of them, like, and their body parts are all scattered everywhere, kind of things like that. So we actually had to get 97 mannequins and distress each and every single one of them. You know, of course, our neighbors were not too happy about it because they'd be walking past and you'd see all this, like, you know, burnt up mannequins and all that just standing. And of course, since outside we have our own sense of humor, we started putting the mannequins facing, you know, the windows and all that so that, you know, like scare people and things. but eventually we brought it to the house, and, you know, trying to create a house with a maze of mannequins turns out probably to be one of the most terrifying but fun things. we have ever done. And they and when we finally finished it and we were shooting at another location and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, it's done." I thought, "Yes, it's great." And so we're halfway shooting and it was about, I think, 8 o'clock. And we realized we left all the props back there. And so, you know, one of the art person had to go back and grab it. Well, nobody wanted to go back to that house alone, so they had to draw straws, and, you know, they had to, like, you know, oh, crap. And so it was actually Caitlin who drew the straw, and she was, like, mortified that she had to go back to that house alone, even though she built those mannequins. And she actually called her boyfriend to meet her at the house so they could walk in together, and it was great. You know, and then when we were done with the mannequins, we, you know, it was just us having fun. We would put the mannequins in, like, you know, our bathrooms and things like that to freak people out when they open the door. So we really had a lot of fun with the mannequins.
That's when you know you've done a good job, when the people who put together the make-believe are frightened by the end result.
Yes. But I think that's, I mean, if you ever had a mannequin in the house, right, if you ever had one, There is the only that terrifying feeling when you walk out all of a sudden at the corner of your eye there's this, like, human body standing there, and it always makes me jump no matter what it is. And you know, even when my sister comes to my house, because now I have the mannequin, I have the Sleeping Beauty costume in my house now. My sister hates it. She comes and says, "Ah, that thing always gets me. I hate that thing," even though it looks beautiful. But I think it's just the whole human look of it that really gets to people. And I love it. Absolutely adore it.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. So what project is on your plate next?
I just wrapped up another horror movie directing another horror movie called Go South. That one is completed already. So it's in the hands of the distributors now. And I am about 2 days away from shooting, I'm actually producing this one. It's called Stasis. It is a science fiction movie. And it's a science fiction movie about time travel, where we were playing the concept about, this started off as another what if. Well, you know, when I'm looking at all the science fiction time travel movies, and I'm always seeing people time travel, right, and their body would go back in time. And I would just say that, like, but isn't body matter? Bodies are matter, but time is not matter. How do these two work together? You know, and then my brain goes, well, what if it's not the body, only your consciousness can go back, and you have to find another body when you travel back in time to inhibit so that your consciousness can, you know, it's almost like taking a shell, almost. And so we played around with that science fiction concept, and in 2 days we will roll cameras and shoot that.
Excellent. Well, we'll have our listeners and fans keep an eye out for those two. But right now, The Curse of Sleeping Beauty will be available in theaters on May 13th, video on demand in iTunes on May 17th, and it really is a visual feast.
Thank you so much. I think that's such a compliment, and really thank you for your time for this interview. I really appreciate it.
And thank you. That's Perry Teo, The Curse of Sleeping Beauty. Check it out. We'll have links to it. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
And my guest is Brittany Oldford, the star of Sci-Fi Channel's new Hunters, which airs Monday nights at 10 p.m. and is so far very, very intriguing and a lot more dark than I was expecting. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thank you for having me.
So You are playing Agent Allison Regan of the Exoterrorism Unit, and you have several special abilities, and you, so far you've been a complete badass.
Thank you.
Did you have to do any particular weapons or hand-to-hand training before this?
Definitely, yeah. There was a lot of weapons training on set, nearly every episode, actually, to make sure that we were looking sharp and integrating, you know, the weapons training with the physicality of a hunter as well, which is interesting. And we had training with stunt coordinators and our stunt doubles, really figuring out the choreography for all of the fight scenes because, you know, we need to make sure that we're doing what's comfortable for us and that we can keep injuries at a minimum so we can work the next day.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to maintain continuity if you have a cast on your wrist.
Exactly.
So what drew you to the role of Allison?
What drew me to Allison was really just how strong she was, how resilient she was. You know, she's been through a lot. She is very different than the people around her, so she faces ridicule fairly often. And I thought that was powerful, seeing someone different feeling compelled to fight against that, as well as, I mean, the project as a whole, you know, filming in Australia and working with Galen Hurd and Ellie Chaidez, working for Sci-Fi was a dream. I couldn't say no.
Now, without getting too spoilery, I'm going to say impending secrets connection between Allison and the main terrorist that her team is hunting, McCarthy, seems to be compelling both of them. Is there anything you could shed on that doesn't go into deep spoiler territory?
Sure. I think McCarthy knows a lot more about Allison than she knows about him. Which is very interesting and sort of why they both are able to interact with each other in a way that's sort of odd at first glance, because of course she is hunting him and he is, you know, a more powerful hunter, so can overpower her, and we see that as well. But it's very interesting because they're both of the same species and kind of feeling each other out and figuring out where they belong in each other's worlds.
Now, the story that this is based on is from a book by Whitley Strieber. Had you been familiar with any of his books before this?
I read Alien Hunter during the pre-production process, and I know that there have been, you know, more of his books that have been adapted, and I just think that he's such an incredible author and such an incredible presence in the science fiction world.
What do you look forward to most in, I guess, in seeing Allison's character grow and work better with the team, or see what develops with the team? Because it seems like there may be a mole.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing the audience's perspective on the relationships, actually. That's really interesting to me, and their responses to each character and all the twists and turns and the information that we're going to be given episode to episode. And when the big reveal happens, it's pretty intense. It'll be pretty wild to see.
Yeah, because so far I'm curious about the connection with sound, because we have the kidnapped wife who is deaf. We have the adopted or stepdaughter, or who's got some Asperger-like issues, but who's also very auditory in nature. And then you've got the hunters who perceive stuff visually through sound. And that connection appeals to me. Was there anything special you had to do in order to bring that across for the audience?
Sure. believe it or not, I'm actually a very auditory person. I'm very sensitive to sound. And it was kind of natural for me, you know, being so sensitive to loud noises, sensitive to very, very subtle things. And really what I found was just kind of giving into the sound and tilting your head, feeling where it's coming from and so on. And also developing the physicalities of the hunters with Julian McMahon, who plays McCarthy, with a movement coach, and talking about it with Gail and talking about it with Natalie and really ironing it out. It was a collaborative process, as I think, hopefully, you know, most first seasons are. And it was great. It was really a treat to kind of be able to express that part of me.
Now, I've noticed that the episodes so far are very heavy into prosthetics and some very, very, shall we say, colorful explosions of body parts. How has that been to work with for you?
Prosthetics I love. I'm actually a huge Sci-Fi Channel fan. One of my favorite shows is Face Off. Nice. Because I got into learning more about prosthetics when I filmed American Horror Story. And then I fell in love. So that was amazing. And our prosthetic supervisor, Justin Dix, is just an absolute legend. So that was wonderful, and as an actor, very helpful, you know, in working with things that are actually there. You can see, you can touch, you can smell. And yeah, you know, some things in life happen, and physical body parts are things that are seen at times. And you just bear down and get through it, and I gotta say, those are probably the most awkward scenes to film. But they look great, and that's what counts.
So are you a newcomer as a science fiction fan, a horror fan?
No, I grew up on it. I bleed this stuff, really.
What's your favorite?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. That's the most difficult question. I love, you know, for me, it's really quite expansive because I love fantasy, and I love books, and I love the movies, and I love magic is huge for me. I both truly believe magic is real. And for sci-fi, I was a really big fan of the Alien series, like Gail and her Alien movies,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because Ripley is like my favorite character ever. And that for me was as a child, I mean, watching those, which really is intense for a kid, but I believed I could do anything because she could do anything. So that for me was huge in my life. And the first live action movie I remember watching as a child was Star Wars. Thank you, Mom. Yeah. Episode 4, 5, and 6 over and over and over and over again. And I think I've watched Lord of the Rings movies, something ridiculous, like 100 times each. So probably more actually. And I wish I was kidding.
Yeah, we're all geeks here. So.
Yep. Yeah.
No, I was saying, yeah. And I was like, yeah, we're all geeks here. We have our movies that we've watched, you know, a dozen times.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
And we need more of that good stuff. And I hope that Hunters hangs around to become part of that long tradition of good stuff that Sci-Fi Channel's been bringing us the past couple of years. What else other than Hunters have you been working on lately?
There are a couple of things that are in the mix right now, which are quite exciting. And at the moment, we're just going to see what sticks. And I think it's going to be a really good year.
Excellent, excellent. So we have Hunters on Sci-Fi Channel Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. How many episodes are there in the first season? 13?
Yes.
Okay, so everybody has a chance to hop on this train. And like I said, this is darker than some of the newer shows that Sci-Fi Channel has put out. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of First Wave, a little bit of Battlestar Galactica. And I'm looking forward to seeing where that takes us as viewers and you and your character.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's Hunters on Sci-Fi Channel, 10 p.m. Eastern on Monday nights. Check it out. Brittany, thank you so, so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. A little bit of horror now and then in our lives is a good thing. At least I think so. It becomes harder and harder to find good horror because there's so much of it coming out, but that's probably because horror movies are seen as easy and cheap to make. So there's that. But even average horror can be fun if it's well done. That's my start, and I'm sticking to it. the reason I bring that up is because we do have some more goodies coming your way from our friends at Wildclaw Theater. More Death Scribe stuff coming, and maybe even a little bit more on one of their other shows. So stay tuned for that. We have some contests coming up for Star Trek, related to the 50th anniversary. Wow, 50 years of Star Trek. That is a hell of a lot of geeking. That's all I'm going to say. I hope we can get something going for Star Trek. Any Trek fans out there, you got any ideas? How are you going to celebrate 50 years of such a classic, iconic TV show, and I guess, well, franchise at this point, yeah, because we have TV shows, we have movies, we have books, we have games, we have animation, a little bit of everything for everyone. Now, I will admit, I never saw the animated series at all, so I know nothing about it whatsoever. I haven't seen it on streaming, so I'm pretty sure that's not an option for me, but I'm curious now, just with all this slow-rolling ramping up of the hype getting towards the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the new streaming Star Trek series that CBS Paramount is putting together. I saw something that said that they weren't going to let people binge watch episodes. And my first thought when I saw that headline was, and what's the point of streaming it if you can't binge 3 or 4 episodes in a row? I don't know. Hopefully someone will, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh yeah, inform them of the short-sightedness of that particular choice, if indeed that is something they plan to go through with. But get your questions and your thoughts and comments together about what Star Trek meant to you. And then we'll do something with that later. But for now, a little bit of horror, a little bit of Star Trek. No, the joke is too easy. I'm not going there. But that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments about anything we've talked about, please give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a message, leave a voicemail, ask a question, or you could record a longer question of your own. Send that in an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com, or just write up a few questions and I'll get to them. I'll answer them on the air if you want me to. Leave us a review on iTunes. You can also listen to us through iTunes. You can listen to us through Stitcher, through TuneIn. And yes, now that Google Play does podcasts, I'm working on it. Check us out on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi, @SliceOfSciFiTV. Darren and Noah did a compare and contrast between Captain America Civil War and X-Men Apocalypse, two storied Marvel franchises with very, very different results. And they were, I'm going to use the word particular about the jobs that were done on both of those movies. And as an X-Men fan, kind of disappointed. Little bit disappointed. But they're movies. I'll get over it. You can find that review over on the websites, sliceofsci-fi.com and sliceofsci-fi.tv. Leave your own comments, chip in if you want to leave a different opinion of the movies if you've seen them. You can also check out some of our other venues, writersafterdark.com, popculturegeeks.com, kickassmysticninjas.com, and itscomicbookday.com. Thank you, everyone, for your donations, your patronage. Your support is invaluable. I don't know if I can express that deeply enough, but thank you, everyone, because your support helps keep the show hosting going, the website hosting going. So thank you, everyone. You can add your patronage, your pledges, by going over to patreon.com. It's patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Choose a level to pledge monthly at for your support. And in advance, again, thank you. Thank you so much. One more time, that URL is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. As always, my heartfelt thanks goes out to the geek rock band Sci Fried, who provides the music that graces this show. You can find them over at sci-friedband.com. If you like your geek-flavored music spiced up with a little rock and roll style, go check out their website. Listen to some more samples that they have. They have some free music over there, and you can also get their albums as well. But that will do it for this show. Thank you very much. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.